quicker than I anticipated. Thanks very much, Bob. This paper focuses on some of the smelly stuff from a research project which took me quite a long time to do. It was an ethnographic study looking at people's relationships with companion dogs. I did interviewing, often going out walking with people and their dogs, in London and in rural Leicestershire. And I also kept a diary of my observations out walking with dogs for a calendar year, which has as much to say about the British weather, I think, as anything else. It's definitely the case that dogs do smell. Some breeds of dog smelling more than others. So, as we heard yesterday, they do perspire. They perspire through their pants. They also produce earwax, like glands in their ears, and it produces a kind of yeasty smelling wax. They also have their own individual kind of scent. And in writing this paper, I've done more sniffing than I think I've ever done before, and I can clearly confirm that the three dogs I live with smell very differently. And the cats, I've been cat sniffing too. But it's questionable as to whether these animals cause odour in our home. Now, if you looked at a description of the smell of dogs from a veterinary website, it would just tell you it's a gentle, yeasty smell, that dogs don't smell particularly strongly. But if you looked at the Cleanipedia site sponsored by Unilever, dogs sweat through their paws. They pad this sweat throughout your home. If you allow them on the sofa, they transfer their sweat into your furnishings. And it has question and answer sessions. So, I mean, this one, I just couldn't believe it. Should I wash my Yorkie with bicarbonate of soda and vinegar? Luckily, the answer was no, but I almost expected it to be possible that this would be a good idea. If you Google smelly dogs, most of the sites that will come up will be sites that tell you how to sell your home even if you have a dog. And as this person says, most sellers don't even realise their home has a pet odour. We're so used to it, those of us who share our homes with dogs, that we seem to have lost our sense of smell. So these are two examples from American websites. And this I thought was fantastic. If you want to ensure you get the highest final sale price, you'll have to properly stage your home to create the illusion you are not a pet owner. So many of these sites say that if you're selling your house, that you will really need to wash everything that can be washed. You probably need to replace all your carpet, recover your furniture, buy new furniture to eliminate the smell. And what I thought was very interesting is the way in which somebody coming to view a property in order to buy it has an almost dog-like, powerful sense of smell. Here we go. You know, not only are odours very obvious when buyers first enter your home, they're very difficult to get rid of. Where do they live? Everywhere. Make sure you know each location your pet has had an accident. Did your cat get sick on the windowsill? If so, a simple paint job won't remove the smell. You'll have to replace the wood. The same is true for flooring. So if your puppy peed on the carpet, replace the carpet. Replace the underlay. Substantial stains can even seep into the subfloor. I mean, this is really kind of, you know, dramatic, the idea that dogs will smell. And some of the websites say that a buyer of a property, a potential buyer, can smell stains when they walk through the door. So, what's going on? Because in the UK, almost half of people live in a place with a cat or a dog. So 8.5 million dogs living as pets in UK households, 23% of households having at least one, many having more, across the countries of Europe, 75 million dogs. And for EU countries, the statistics are pretty much the same as for the UK, 24% of households with a cat, 25% of households in 2012 with at least one dog. So in the UK, large amounts of us are living these multi-species lives in these houses that must be incredibly smelly. So my disciplinary background, I hop about a bit, but I'm probably a sociologist. And Clinton Sanders talks about how our relationships with the animals we live with in the home really leave, as he says, a considerable gap in the sociology of everyday life. And sociologists are profoundly interested in the everyday. And much of what's written sociologically, the small literature that there is, that talks about relationships with animal companions in the home, tends to focus on the intimacy of relationship, but doesn't have much to say about the sharing of household space, which was something that I am interested in. Nikki Charles' recent work talks about how animals should be seen as actors in intimate relationships, and certainly that's what I found in the research I did. Many people would actually talk with the dogs they lived with while they were answering the questions that I was asking them, so it was some kind of consultation. Charles goes on to say that these relationships we have with animals in the home are fundamentally embodied, intercorporeal. An intimate space is often shared. So Gab talks about, she wants to describe the home as post-human, and says the fact that cats and dogs are allowed into bedrooms and bathrooms shows how intimate the relationship we have with them is. So the question that arose for me really is, people looking for a home have a nose as sensitive as a dog, but people living with a dog seem to have blunted their sense of smell. What is actually going on there? Or is that what's going on? So when I saw this call for papers, I trawled through my data to see what people had to say about smell. And a quick word on methods, because I'm a sociologist, we always have to do this. So I kept a diary for a calendar year, that was long ago, 2009 to 10. Semi-structured interviews, most of these were out walking the dog, and what I would usually do is just follow people on their normal route. Very disrupted narratives, there's dogs barking, there's squeaky toys, there are people who aren't being interviewed who just insist on coming up and talking to you. There are dogs playing. The first interview I did, having filled in all my ethical forms for my university, the Jack Russell started a fight. It nearly ended in disaster, but never mind. These were two dogs I lived with. One of them, sadly, the Jack Russell, no longer with me. But I called myself a research pack because they came with me. If I went to somebody's house to interview them, they were with me. Obviously, they were out if I was walking the dog. And I'm afraid, Sandra, that the Jack Russell has very strong likes and dislikes. So I couldn't actually interview the guys that I know with the Rhodesian Ridgebacks, because Kevin the Jack Russell never has liked Rhodesian Ridgebacks. So the dogs did have agency, really, in determining the interview sample. The largest set of interviews I did was in London, in the Lee Valley Park. And when I started presenting the data, people said, Londoners are strange people. If you had a rural sample, you'd find something completely different. So when I moved to rural Leicestershire, I thought, aha, this is perfect. I'm engaging with a new dog walking community. I'll do some more interviews. Did I find anything different? Absolutely not. In fact, I found more strange behaviour in the countryside than you might have expected. There's lots of laughter in the interview data. Lots of laughter, lots of talking to dogs. But also, there's a kind of dark side to living with a dog and finding your everyday humorous. Because people who didn't have dogs were seen, as one person described, as lonely and sad. They don't have a sense of humour. They need to chill out a bit and not fret about mess. And that made me think, or not fret about smells. So most of the people that I interviewed, rural or urban, allowed dogs everywhere. So these were typical quotes. He's allowed all over the home, everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. They've got the whole house to themselves. A minority, I would say less than 25%, did have some barriers. So in some cases, dogs were not allowed upstairs or in bedrooms or in kitchens. And sometimes there was a smell factor involved, as we see in this quote here. So you used to let them on the beds, I've stopped that now. Did take over feet marks, hair everywhere. And then she's stalling. And you know, it's quite, well, you know, she'll sit on your bed and have a couple of farts and she'll tread in poo and walk all over your bed. So there's clearly an element that this intimate space perhaps should not be shared. But I was astounded at how many people shared their beds with dogs. The vast majority of people shared their bedrooms with dogs, and over half the people I spoke to slept with their dog on a regular basis. And this was often described as a kind of guilty pleasure. Most people who did sleep with their dog were a bit reticent about admitting that. So this is typical. I always said I wasn't going to do it. It's just too tempting. He comes in for a cuddle in the morning. I have a cup of tea and a cuddle. And then I take him for his walk. And that phrase, a cup of tea and a cuddle, came up again and again and again in the data. But people are very aware that other people they may speak to, particularly people who aren't dog people, would find this not so good. You know, people say, oh, that's disgusting. I think, what are they going on about? I'd rather have some dogs in my bed than some of my friends, you know, the mess they make and the carnage they cause. So people are quite defensive about this sharing of intimate space and concerned about the kind of disgust this might engender. But there are conflicts and difficulties, and there are a whole array of stories about food. So in the top case, we have a Staffordshire Terrier who was a puppy. He was going to be drowned in a canal. He was found in a bag. And he was crafty. He could open the fridge. And the woman actually stands there and kind of acts out what the staffy used to do, pushing people out the way in order to open the fridge and get the cheese. So, and people found this incredibly frustrating. And in this second quote, he stole 12 onion barges and 12 samosas, frozen. The woman couldn't believe it. Frozen. From the top of the cooker. I heard this big clang, and it was on the back of the cooker as well. So something at the back of the cooker, something that is frozen, is supposed, it's out of the way. It's put away. But it's not put away because the dog can smell it. And of course, this is just asking for trouble. It's meat. It's warm. It's going to be gone. The hot sausage rolls. She'd ate, what, 3 dozen? And this woman was terribly worried that eating these sausage rolls had given her dog a permanent problem with her digestive system. Now, in some of the dog training literature, it does talk about how part of the problem we have in relating to dogs is because we're such noisy, clunky primates. And we underestimate how dogs, you see, see the world different, smell the world differently, use different kinds of senses in different ways that we do. And very, very few people acknowledge that. Everybody had a story about stolen food, but nobody had a story about different kinds of sensory perception. So here, they can smell thousands and thousands better. So what I think is a way, because I can't see it and the dog can't see it, well, it's not a way for them, because it must smell so strong, she can't resist it. Why don't I learn that? This woman says. And this one is a perfect illustration of this kind of primate versus canid thing. We shout, don't we? We shout at them. That's exactly what I do when one of my lurchers disappears into the far horizon. Shout and wave my arms around. And we freak them out. We stare at them. This is what we do. We put food away. He can smell bloody anything. Dog walkers do swear a lot, I have to say. Bloody anything. A door doesn't stop him smelling. He's so clever, he can open the doors. He's more clever than my husband, he can close it. So he smells stuff, he gets stuff, he eats it. I go ballistic and I start shouting, which is not fair, but it's frustrating. And she's just really speeding up when she's telling this particular story. So, the phrase Chanel number 5, I don't know if any of you are aware of it, but many people used it to describe the aroma of fox poo in particular, or perhaps a dead carcass of something that's been rolled in. So the dog comes back, covered in Chanel number 5, pleased with itself, thinking, I smell fantastic, I'm ready for the hunt now. And the owners are like, oh, they've got to go in the car as well, open the windows. So people were disgusted. People can smell. So lists of disgusting habits came out in a litany, like this one, rolling in fox poo, eating it, stinking out the car. When he chomps at home, we all blame each other, but it's him lying on the floor. and this one, the dog's constantly farting, pretty much constantly, when he's dozing, which if he's not out walking or eating, is pretty much most of the time. And this woman can't stop laughing, but it's such a strong description of horror. Look, he just creates an atmosphere, a thick fog of horror. And always nearest to me, and sometimes, well, bloody hell, phew, God, a thick, thick fog. I mean, I just thought she wasn't going to stop. So people can smell. And this one, it's constant, constant. You take your eye off him for one fucking minute and there he is, covered in Chanel number 5. He loves it, just loves it. I wash him, of course, tomato ketchup, for those of you who don't know. If a dog rolls in something disgusting, tomato ketchup before you do the washing kills it. It's great. So ketchup, shampoo, it just lingers. I think he pretty much always smells slightly of shit. And I interviewed this person in her house. My house must stink. Does my house stink? My bed must stink. And so she's really having a bit of an existential crisis here. And people do experience disgust quite strongly. This guy is laughing but also retching when he's remembering the things he's cleared off his carpet. So the dog eats disgusting things, feels the worse for wear for it, and then decides to retch them up in the middle of the living room, which is just so vile. I put rubber gloves on, I brushed their bloody teeth, because, you know, rank bloody breath. And, you know, and of course he's talking to the dog, he's like, you're staying out there, stay out there. And this one about worrying that her puppy took so long to house train that her house would just smell of urine. And at the time I just remember weeping and constantly mopping and just thinking, oh my God, this is awful. I forget about it, but at the time I was hysterical and the house must have stunk. So I do think people living with dogs are aware of the extra labour, the extra mess, and the extra smells that they may have to encounter. Those who did have children often mentioned this in relation to children, which I thought was quite interesting, because there is something about bringing up small children forces you to encounter an embodied existence. So this one, I'm not having a dog because I've got to pick the poo up. I've had 2 children, I've done nappies, and you know, you can wash your hands, but this is interesting, I have to pick the poo up. Her husband won't do it. But it was rather, that was the one difference I did find in terms of domestic labour. The people in London, it was both men and women doing the extra work associated with living with a dog, whereas in the countryside, gender relations were a little more traditional. So this guy, and what's very interesting about this, is that he calls his grandchildren things, pretty much. I've sort of got stepsons as well as grandchildren and things. Mopping up after other people's mess, I've done it for so long, it doesn't really matter whether it's human, and then he kind of doesn't know, or an animal. So this is how it is. For some people, there are people who have stories of increased tolerance living with a dog. But I don't think it's losing the ability to see dirt or to experience smell. So I don't think it's that people can't necessarily smell, but perhaps they've changed that. So this person, a little bit house proud before I had him, a bit particular, but you just accept that you're going to have the mud, the bracken brought in, muddy paw prints within a day of cleaning your windows. Doesn't matter. I prefer to have the dog than a clean and tidy house all the time. So, in thinking about this, in some work that I did that was actually about animals and, well, dogs and film and television, I and Tracy Jensen had this idea of the mongrel domestic, that living with dogs often messes up our lives. It messes up our ideas about family, about kin. It messes up our ideas about space, cleanliness, all kinds of things. Because, of course, what we see culturally around us on British television are many houses that look absolutely... they come off the Unilever website. I've never lived in such a place. And within this mongrel domestic, it's not just humans adapting, it's dogs adapting too. So there is a co-constituted space and place of home. I could have written a paper about touch, because that, with the often with the smell and the touch, people talk about them in a very much interrelated way, because they're talking about physical closeness. And it really made me think, in re-looking at this data, how sight-bound we are, and perhaps some of the difficulties or tensions people do encounter with dogs, perhaps some of the frustrations are because of our inability to think from their point of view. So, do we tolerate the smells of dogs? Are we acclimatised to the smells of dogs? Perhaps a little bit of both. But do people smell differently in the post-human home? Interesting, though, I was thinking yesterday, when I did interview people in their homes, and some people did have bizarrely Cleanipedia-type homes, but they didn't have any air freshener plugins. I didn't see one of those at all. So do we smell differently? Do we have a different idea about what smells good? And could we learn to smell better, to be more attentive? And the title, which I didn't mention, It Smells Good to Me, there's a woman on her sofa with her arm round her bull terrier, and she says, we sit here, we watch telly, she'll fart, it smells good to me. Thank you.